There, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, December 30th. Welcome back to the I Own College Basketball Podcast. Got Matt Norlander with me and got a lot of stuff to get to, including a discussion about Saturday's biggest game, which is Villanova at Creighton in the amazing calendar year that the Wildcats are on the verge of closing. Plus, Louisville, Indiana play tomorrow. Both of them are coming off losses. We will talk about that. Duke is at Virginia Tech, minus Grayson Allen. We will get into that. But first things first, glad Butler is okay. What a scary story involving the Bulldogs. It's got nothing to do with their upset loss at St. John's on Thursday night. They chartered a plane home and apparently lost cabin pressure. They had to make an emergency landing. Like the mast came down. Like all the stuff you see in a movie. That is just a terrifying scene. Everybody's okay, but what a weird basketball story to wake up to this morning, huh?
Yeah, that's definitely frightening. Glad everyone is okay. They actually, so they're busing at home in the process of us recording this podcast from Pittsburgh to Indianapolis. That's almost, 6 hours. And the team decided to do it, one, because they couldn't get a plane until later Friday anyway. So getting home by bus actually will get them home faster. Plus, I've got to believe that there are a number of people that would just have, even though statistically it's much more dangerous to travel by road than by plane, the fact of the matter is when you're involved in that kind of situation on a plane, like less than 12 hours prior, you're going to feel much more at ease and much safer riding on the road heading home than having to get in a plane, fly in the air again, do all that stuff. So definitely really happy everyone's okay. I did speak with a Butler assistant this morning and their sports information director. You know, it was just a freaky and surreal scene just because, you know, when the masks come down, then you feel like, okay, this is very much for real. And it was a big descent. You know, the lights go off, the emergency lights turn on. Chris Holtman told our buddy Jeff Goodman that actually it started to feel really cold, and that's kind of a frightening thing overall to just even think about, because obviously, you know, you're so high up in the air, the temperature is cold up there. And then once those things kind of set in, you start descending rapidly. Fortunately, they're okay, and this is just a reminder that pilots kind of have a thankless job in a certain way, just because they are trained for these kinds of things. And it's amazing to me that there are so few plane crashes in this country annually. It's really incredible when you consider how many flights there are. Happy that they're okay. And it now, you know, is rightfully overshadowing what was a surprising loss for Butler on the road at St. John's to start off Big East play. Butler had been so good in the non-conference, but we'll see if they can regroup. They host Providence at home on Sunday.
You ever had a scare in a plane like that, or anything? Did you
hold
ever
on? Let me get some wood to knock on here.
Have you ever had a moment where you felt like, oh no, this might really be it?
Knocking on wood again.
Yeah.
No, I have never. I've never had a truly, you know, bad plane experience. I've had a couple of things of turbulence where it's been rough and rocky. But I've never had anything, and I've heard stories. I mean, you talk with coaches, they travel all the time.
Right.
You'll definitely get coaches that'll say, you know, no, you know, back in this year, that year, whatever, going here or there, red eye, whatever. Cause coaches travel between games and recruiting. They definitely, almost all of them have had one or two, you know, big time scary scenarios. I don't know if quite on the level of Butler. I mean, guys were texting their family members just in case. What about you?
I've never had one where the mask came down, right? And I can't imagine what that's like, because you do start to think the worst, you know, and you, I assume you start to think that this really might be it. I've had one where we were landing. This was in Raleigh, I think. I know I was going to a Duke Carolina game. I can't remember if I flew into Charlotte or Raleigh, but really, really windy, and our pilot like was going to overrun the runway, or like was going to land with not enough runway. So like, imagine this, we're landing like as you normally would, except it's really windy. So you can feel the plane shaking back and forth. And then he abruptly just takes up, you know, goes back up in the air. So you're preparing to hit the ground and land,
yeah.
But he pulls the plane back up and we went straight back up into the air and then circled around and then had to land again. And the reason is because he thought he was going to run out of runway. So that was pretty scary, if only because, like, it's something you never experience. Like, if a plane's on the way down, you ultimately, like, wheels touch the pavement. You don't ever expect for it to just be jerked back up into the air. And so that was so scary for only a moment, because it was like it was out of nowhere. And then you realized everything was fine and whatever. The other time I was going to New York, and I had Kelly and Aiden with me. We only had one child at the time, so it was a while ago. I think for the Big East tournament, and we got above New York, and just a thunderstorm was terrible. I mean, just awful. And we were, basically circling New York because we couldn't find a window to land. Like, they couldn't land the plane. The weather was so bad. So we're just flying above New York, and the turbulence was awful. And we circled New York for like 45 minutes, and it was bounce, bounce, bounce the whole time. I am not exaggerating. If there were 100, keep it simple. If there were 100 people on the plane, 50 of them threw up. Like, I'm used to the turbulence doesn't bother me, but like the sound of other people throwing up, like, yeah, almost made me throw up. Like, you could not have been on a row anywhere in that plane where either somebody in front of you or behind you has not puked into the back. I mean, it was awful. Bounce, 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 bounce. So then we had to do an emergency landing in Pittsburgh, same way as Butler did.
I remember this.
Yeah. Yes. So we landed in Pittsburgh. They say, stay close to the gate because we need to, we're waiting for a weather window to open up, and then we're going to depart quickly, and then we will get you to LaGuardia. So we all stay next to the gate. About within the hour, like, they put us back on the plane, fly back to New York, or whatever window was supposed to be open, closed.
Right.
And we circle New York again for like another hour, same thing. But just turbulence and people throwing up. I mean, just awful. And finally, they took us back to Pittsburgh. We just stayed the night in Pittsburgh. Like, I missed the – what? I remember that.
That was my first year at CBS, because I do remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So. Yeah. Like, I didn't think I was going to die, but I wasn't 100% sure we were going to live. It was – in the sound of just everybody getting sick on the plane was just – ugh. But, no, I've never seen the mask come down, so – yeah, thank whoever you want to thank for Butler being okay, because that was an absolute scary thing to read this morning. And as you pointed out, that program has been through enough, you know, with the death.
They are ready to get to 2017. It's been an emotionally exhausting year for that program.
Right. So thank God they're okay. Before we look ahead to Saturday's games, let's look back to another Wednesday night. Just fabulous game and what has been a fabulous college basketball season. I think you and I were talking in the preseason, and one of the things I mentioned was that, you know, I don't feel like there's any great storylines, or there's any, and, you know, like, this has turned, like, I had underestimated or underappreciated what was possible with this basketball season, because to date it has been awesome. And Wednesday night was the latest example, with that unbelievable game between Oregon and UCLA. Played at Oregon. Looked like Oregon was in control most of the game. Then UCLA takes control late. Then Bryce Alford misses the front end of a 1-1. Next thing you know, Dylan Brooks is hit a game-winning buzzer-beater three-pointer to give UCLA its first loss. I know you wrote about it, but we were talking about Carolina-Kentucky being the game of the year, and I still think it is, but this is on the short list so far.
Yeah, it'd be on the top five. Very well played. It had offense and it had some defense. I mean, people want to hit on UCLA for not being great defensively. I get that. But if you watch the game, actually, there were spots there where they were able to push back on Oregon and make their run in the second half. Lonzo Ball actually didn't even have that great of a game, but he had three huge three-pointers, and then he had a big move on Brooks near the end that looked like it could potentially be sort of a game-sealing drive to the 10 and a nice layup, kind of an NBA move, to be honest. And then Brooks, listen, we spoke about him on the last podcast. He was my preseason National Player of the Year. He hasn't had really huge moments yet. This was obviously one, not just hitting the three-pointer to win the game, but he had a pretty good game overall on the whole. I did give some love in the story to Peyton Pritchard, who hit, in my opinion, a much tougher shot the possession before. He had Alford's hand in his face. Brooks hit his shot with with Lonzo right up on his grill. It was a tough shot, nothing but net, beautiful shot. But Pritchard, a freshman, got it on the wing, kind of forced it, hits the three. It kind of just keeps Oregon alive. And then for Alford, who's one of the best foul shooters in the sport, to miss the front end of the 1-1, that's really, you know, ultimately, this is why it's hard to go undefeated. There are many reasons, but inevitably you're going to run into situations where you have to have things break your way in close games in every possible way, and it's just so hard to expect that every time. And so here, Alford randomly, oddly misses the front end of a 1-1. If he makes the first one, UCLA is going to win the game. He doesn't make it, and then it takes, you know, a big time shot from Brooks to escape and get out with the victory there. It's as I said on the previous podcast, Oregon getting this win makes the Pac-12 race at least interesting, because if UCLA had won, I don't think they'll lose at home this season. So now we've at least got a little bit of intrigue there, and UCLA is, you know, still a top five team in my opinion, and nothing too much to worry about in that regard. Thomas Welsh was fantastic. I mean, they've got weapons everywhere. And Oregon, you know, welcome. You are now, I think, at least on the discussion points and radar for college hoops this season. Obviously now have their chance to sweep the L.A. area schools. USC, who has yet to lose a game, comes in, and I think Oregon will win that. Not necessarily easily, but I don't think it'll be a two-possession game by the time the final horn sounds. I think Oregon starts off 2-0 in Pac-12 play.
The only thing I would say about UCLA not losing at home this year, which I agree with you, I don't think they will either, but they don't have the same kind of home court advantage that like a Kansas has or a Duke has or a Kentucky has. Like those fans don't pack Pauley Pavilion even for a top five team. They'll sell out some games, I hope. I mean, geez, if you can't sell out with this team, I don't know how you ever are going to. But you know, for whatever reason, and there are a whole lot of reasons, they do not enjoy the same type of home atmosphere that a top five team otherwise might enjoy. And so that makes it easier to catch them, you know, in Pauley as opposed to catching Duke at Cameron or catching Kansas at Allen Fieldhouse. I agree with you. I still think UCLA is a top five team. I still think UCLA wins the Pac-12, and I will not pick them to lose at home ever. And I don't think they'll lose more than, you know, three times total in Pac-12 play. But yeah, more than anything, just another fun college basketball game. We've had a pretty decent share of them this season. And so that was a nice one to watch on a Wednesday night heading into the new year. I want to look ahead to some of Saturday's games. But first, let me tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long, long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or for that concert or that show that you want to attend, and none of the older ticket sites seem to want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've created an amazing app and a website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to buy tickets for games and concerts. It's the app I use to get Guns N' Roses tickets for that reunion tour this summer. It's the app I use to see Kanye West's St. Pablo tour.
Just used a GP to get my brother-in-law tickets to a Devils game. See, so there we go. This is natural integration. I absolutely used it.
And did you use the College BB promo code?
Without a doubt, my friend.
How about that? So it's the app Norlander uses. It's the app I use. It's the app you should use too, because like I said, they're going to do a price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites, and that will ensure you get the best possible deal. And if you use that promo code, COLLEGEBB, you're going to get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. So get on it. Download the SeatGeek app, purchase tickets, use the promo code COLLEGEBB, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, the promo code is COLLEGEBB. That's SeatGeek, millions of tickets in one place. Villanova's at Creighton tomorrow. It's interesting. I just wrote a Villanova column that posted earlier today at CBSSports.com. I think everybody knows Villanova's been great. Like, they won the national championship. Be hard not to know that. I don't think people understand how great of a calendar year Villanova has had. And so I went to try to do some research on that. And what I found is that one thing is, and it's a coincidence more than anything else, is that they opened 2016 at Creighton, January 2nd, and they're going to close 2016 at Creighton on January 31st. So it's sort of an interesting way to open and close the same year. And in between, to date, they played 40 games Tomorrow will be their 41st. They are 37-3 in the calendar year 2016. They won a Big East regular season title. They won a national championship. They beat big brands like Kansas and North Carolina. And they've won more games in this calendar year than any team in the history of college basketball has ever won in a calendar year already. Even if they lose at Creighton, nobody's ever won 37. Some teams, like Kentucky's won 36 before in a calendar year. Duke's won 36 before in a calendar year. Nobody's won 37. Villanova's already at 37. Obviously, if they get to 38, it will just set that record a little bit higher. Some of that is because teams play more games, you know, now than they did, say, in the 60s or 70s or 80s. But whatever, the fact is still the fact. 37 wins and counting in the calendar year 2016. If they win at Creighton, they will become just the second school and third team to ever do these things inside of a calendar year. Win a national championship, finish the calendar year with three or fewer losses, and enter the subsequent year ranked number one in the Associated Press poll. UNLV obviously did it when it won a national championship under Tark. Duke has done it twice. I think it's 1991 and 2002, maybe. You know, finished with fewer than three losses in the calendar year, won a national championship, and entered the subsequent year ranked number one. But that's it. Villanova has a chance to join that club. They'll be just the third team ever and only the second school to do it in the past 27 years. And so, you know, sort of the point I make in the column is that it's forever going to be overshadowed because 2016 is the year the Cubs won the World Series. 2016 is the year LeBron delivered an NBA title to Cleveland. The college football playoff is going to be kicking off at right around the same time that Creighton and Villanova goes final on Saturday afternoon. So it'll be overshadowed in the moment. It'll be overshadowed historically. But undeniably, Villanova has had one of the best calendar years in the history of college basketball. And I don't know if people quite grasp that.
You laid it out pretty succinctly there. It's been huge for the Big East, for the program. I don't think it will be lost in general because of the unprecedented way that the title game ended. I think that 2016 will be the year of the Cubs and LeBron and Golden State blowing it 3-1 and all that. But I think Villanova's got to be the third biggest, maybe fourth biggest. If you want to throw in, lump in the Olympics in general, you could. I think it will also be remembered for that. I don't think we're in a bubble here. I mean, just because of how tremendous the game was and the tournament, such a huge event every year. This is an interesting thing that you've picked up on, though, GP. Just in terms of 2016 as a calendar year, start to finish. Now, they've got a really tough game. I don't think they're going to win. I think Creighton will win. It's got the game on its home floor. I think Creighton's really good. I think Creighton's got the ability to flirt with a 2 seed even this season with what it's done so far. And similar to UCLA, I would be surprised if Creighton loses at home. I've never been in that building. Have you been in the building? Yeah, I've heard it's great. I've never been. I've heard it's also like sizable too. It's almost like, in terms of appearance and feel, a pro arena, but with a college crowd.
Oh, sure. No, it's excellent. And it has always been excellent. Like, even when they were in the NBC, like, you know, people in Omaha go to those basketball games and support that program immensely. And now that it's in the Big East, it's just ratcheted up another level. I was there for Doug McDermott's senior day. I happened to be sideline reporting for, I guess it was Creighton and Providence. And like Doug went for did he go for 40 something? Whatever it was, he needed so many points to get to, you know, like what some significant number in career points. And like he smashed it in the first half. Like it was an awesome day to be there. In fact, it's one of my favorite memories of like being in a college basketball arena, because you have this amazing story, like this father coaching his son who developed into one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. And don't ever get it twisted. Doug McDermott, statistically speaking, is one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. And, you know, you have a father You know, and not to, like the mom's there. Imagine what that's like, watching your husband and your son enjoy this moment together, family there. And, like, you know, Doug put on an all-time performance on his last game in that arena in front of a capacity crowd. It was one of those times, you know how it is. You go to enough of these things, it's like, all right, what time's my flight home tomorrow? Like, it does sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes start to feel like a job. And that was a night that it didn't at all. Like, I enjoyed being there because I felt like I was watching, an all-time great college basketball performance from an all-time great college basketball player, but also just a really special moment in the lives of a family that I've gotten to know over the years and really like. So, where we were talking earlier that UCLA doesn't have an intense home court advantage, Creighton absolutely does. And I tend while recognizing it's a coin flip game and who knows, gun to head, I'd probably take the home team in this game because the Creighton team's really, really good, like undefeated and really good, terrific offensively. They got great guard play. They've got a future pro playing in the front court. And that home court advantage is going to be a lot for Villanova to overcome. Now, keep in mind, Villanova's already won at Purdue. And I think as we've watched this season unfold, you recognize, like, I don't know how many other people are going to win at Purdue this year. Maybe nobody. So they can go on the road and win a game. But I guess the larger point I was trying to make with the column is, like, whatever happens Saturday at Creighton, Villanova has already turned in one of the all-time great calendar years in college basketball history. Like I said, in 1990, UNLV went 35-3 in that calendar year, won the national championship, and was number one entering 1991. Duke did it in 1992. They won the national title, finished the calendar year 36-2, and was number one entering 1993. Then Duke did it again in 2001, went 35-3 in the calendar year, won the national championship, and was number one entering 2002. But that's it. You know, since UNLV in 1990, Duke's the only program to have done those three things. Win a national championship, finish with three or fewer losses in a calendar year, and enter the subsequent year ranked number one. And if Villanova does win tomorrow, they'll join that list. It's been remarkable.
Surprising stat that was passed along by Creighton expert SID Rob Anderson. This is surprising to me because Big East has been around, you know, since the 70s. It's only the second time ever that the Big East has ever had a game where two teams entered both undefeated. Now, obviously, for that to happen, league play, especially back in the day, didn't really get going until January. So you'd have to have two teams that were really good that didn't happen to lose a game, and then the schedule fell the right way. The only other time it happened was in 89, Georgetown and Seton Hall played, and they didn't. Their records, you know, combined for, what, 21-0, I think, and obviously Nova and Creighton are 25-26 wins combined. So really, from that perspective, just in terms of statistics and records, it's the biggest regular season game in the history of the conference because you've never had two teams this highly ranked, both undefeated, meeting this far into the season. So it's pretty awesome. And if Nova loses, it doesn't take any shine off their 2016 overall. If they do lose, then yes, the Big East race will get really interesting. If they win, just that's a really tough place to win, and no other team should be necessarily placed ahead of them in terms of, okay, Nova can win a title again, especially if they win convincingly, GP. If they don't, fine, we'll talk about it on Monday's podcast. But if they go in and are able to handle Creighton, it's not going to say anything less about Creighton. I think it would be more about Villanova and still the number one team. Like, as you said, Duke is the favorite, but that would be a pretty huge statement win to close out the year. That's all.
Yeah, I'm not picking Villanova to win a national championship, but anybody who tells you they can't do it is crazy. Like, they absolutely can go back-to-back, become the first team to go back-to-back since Florida, of course, did it in 2006, 2007. They are not the favorite. They're ranked number one, but they're not the favorite according to Las Vegas odds makers. They're not even the second favorite, I don't believe, at least as recently as
UCLA. Yeah.
It was UCLA just a couple of days ago. But can they do it? Sure. And I don't mean they can do it because anything's possible. I mean, there's probably about 8-9 teams that can realistically, you know, hope of winning a national championship. Like, anybody can try to do it and dream about it, but can you realistically put it on your to-do list? There's about, you know, 7, 8, 9 teams. But Villanova's one of them. And they're probably in the top half of that list as opposed to the bottom half. So what an awesome New Year's Eve we've got planned ahead. I had somebody ask me earlier today, so you got any big New Year's Eve plans? Well, A, no. I have 3 kids, one of whom isn't even supposed to be born for another week. So yeah. No, we're staying home. But yeah, even if I had no kids, like, what a great day to just stay home. You get Villanova Creighton. Tipping at, you know, I guess it's 1 Eastern, and then right as it wraps up, you get Alabama-Washington College Football Playoff, then you get Clemson-Ohio State College Football Playoff. It's a great sports television day.
It is, although, so I do have some New Year's plans. I'll go to a buddy's house, and the game will kind of be on in the background. Like, last year, we didn't really watch, I don't know, like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm definitely psyched for the football playoff. I love that it's here and all that. But it happening on New Year's Eve.
It's awful. You know, it's arrogant.
I know they're changing it too. Yeah, right, and they couldn't change it here, but I'll just be honest. Like, the game will be on, but I'm going to be like, I don't, you know, I got a buddy who throws a New Year's party every year. He's got a nice house. It's awesome to go to. It's fun. And we'll have the game on. There'll be guys there that are interested. I'll have buddies that will absolutely have hundreds of dollars on the game, and so that will be part of it. But it's definitely, it feels like there's something that's taken away from it by having it on New Year's Eve. I know they're trying to change that and not have it on weekends and all that stuff going forward when New Year's Eve is on a weekend. But it makes for a great day. But I'm just saying, like, that second game will wrap up probably around 11:15 or so, right? It's the second game is 7:15 kickoff or something like that. So, I mean, on the East Coast at least, I don't know. It's there, but it's more like wallpaper for the evening than a central event, because New Year's Eve is a deal where a lot of people like go out and do other things. They don't make their plans around a football game, even if the football game is a huge one. That's all.
Well, like last year was even worse because it New Year's Eve happened to fall on a weekday. So like people were at work. The college football, like the national semifinal in college football was kicking off, and like half of America was working, like office jobs and stuff. And so, you know, as you get older and you have children, we went to my brother-in-law's house last year, but like we didn't go out. And so the football game's on and we all watched it and whatever. But you're exactly right. Like the folks in charge of the college football playoff, when they initially announced they were going to do these on New Year's Eve, it was announced with such arrogance. They were like, we're going to change New Year's Eve habits. Well, no, you're not. Like, you know, people still like to go out, and, you know, every restaurant in America is full. Every bar in America is full. Like, you're not going to make a billion people decide to, you know, stay home to watch, you know, Ohio State versus Clemson. Like, what are you talking about? And the television ratings last year showed that. Like, it was embarrassing for them because they've got this unbelievable product, but they put it like literally at the one time where you can't put it, and because most people are not most people, but millions and millions and millions of people who would otherwise be at home and watching are not at home, and so they're not watching, and they're smart to move away from that. Sometimes these power brokers are so stubborn, like they were for years in fighting against the college football playoff, and like they will be for however long fighting against an expanded playoff, and then we'll ultimately get to that day as well. But they're often so stubborn to try to prove a point, or just because they're hard-headed or for whatever reason. But thankfully, they're not stubborn about this. It doesn't affect my viewing. Like I said, I'd be home tomorrow anyway. But there's a lot of people who would watch those games tomorrow, who aren't going to watch those games tomorrow because they're bartenders who have to work, they're waitresses who have to work, they're people who, you know, take their wives or their girlfriends or their mistresses out for New Year's Eve dinners.
I don't know if mistresses on a New Year's Eve, I don't know if that's prime. I don't know if December 31 is a prime mistress night, but I'm going to take your word for it. I mean, feel like, you know, August 11th, maybe March 20. April 15, something like that, you know, tax day, you're at the office late, supposedly. Those might be big mistress days. I don't think you're real. Listen, you're a player. If you can pull off New Year's Eve, then more power to you.
Did I ever tell you about the weird New Year's Eve I had with this girl I was seeing like a bazillion years ago?
You've told the story on the podcast.
Holy crap. Jeez. So that's my, perhaps that's why that popped into my head. By the way, she wasn't my mistress. I was 22 years old. I was her side piece, I guess is what the way you would describe me. I was the one in the right. She was the one in the wrong. But
my goodness. The day, by the way.
Hopefully she's doing okay these days. I'm sure she is. She's a sweet girl.
Listen, I like that college basketball will at least set the table for college football, because not only do we have Creighton Nova, we get Louisville, Indiana. That game is on CBS, by the way, which I believe is the Network of Stars, right,
GP? It's America's most watched network and the Network of Stars.
Yeah, so that's suddenly a game with plenty of urgency to it and some meaning to it, because they're both coming off losses. Indiana, obviously, much worse. I mean, they were handled by Tim Miles in Nebraska, and that's a Nebraska team that I think will be under 500 when we get to the end of the year. Not a good loss for Indiana. That IU win in the Big Ten pick by you is not off the table, but it's much harder to see right now, because not only did they lose it, but they lose it at home.
Right.
So you drop a game like that, now it's even more urgent. This IU-Louisville tilt would be on a neutral in Indianapolis. I'm intrigued by it. Do we have a line on that yet, GP?
I have not seen a line posted on that
yet. Guess would be Louisville -2. I haven't seen one either. That's my guess.
You think Louisville would be favored over Indiana in Indianapolis?
Maybe. I do. By 2.
KenPom has them projected to win 74-71, Louisville. So that suggests Louisville will be favored in the game.
Yeah.
But I bet it's not 3. I bet it's like 2, 1.5, yeah. 2.
Yeah, I would think so. But now, Indiana's just got a couple of weird losses. The Fort Wayne one, now the Nebraska one. I don't know. Thoughts on the game overall?
Well, first off, let's back up. Like that, Indiana and Louisville both took losses the other night. Indiana's is like, what happened? You can't be a Big Ten contender, or you shouldn't be a Big Ten contender and losing at home to Nebraska. With all due respect to Tim and Nebraska, like, that's not the type of team that ought to be able to go in and beat a top 20 Indiana team on the road. And the point spread suggested that as well. I think Indiana was like a 14-15 point favorite in the game. So to lose, that was a massive upset. Virginia, they look great. I mean, they are great again.
Number one in KenPom right now.
Yeah. I mean, they just to go in and do that to Louisville. And now they beat, since we're on this calendar year theme, I actually think this is how I started thinking in terms of calendar year for that Villanova thing. Because of the way the schedule fell, Virginia and Louisville played 3 times in the calendar year 2016. Twice last season, obviously, and then once this season. And Virginia won all 3 and like held Louisville to miserable percentages and point totals in all 3 games. Like, Rick Pitino is undeniably one of the greatest coaches in the history of college basketball, and his teams just, for whatever reason, struggle immensely. And it's not for whatever reason, like it's a mystery, like it's for obvious reasons. They struggle immensely with Tony Bennett's teams. And I wrote that, and then somebody, I think correctfully, they're probably just trying to be a smartass, but like they were correct, pointed out on Twitter, like whose team doesn't struggle with Tony Bennett's teams? Like, who doesn't Tony Bennett give fits? And that's a fair point. Like his style of coaching and the program he's created and the culture he's established, like almost regardless of the pieces, it feels like they're just going to just be this every single year, basically without exception. It feels like they lose whoever they lose. Keep in mind, they lost their most talented player, in November. Doesn't seem to matter. Like, Indiana Louisville tomorrow, I'm looking forward to it, but still, I walk out of that thinking, Louisville could still win the ACC, I guess, Carolina, Duke. But Virginia's going to be right there again. If we weren't sure of it in the preseason, we should be sure of it by now. With Indiana and Louisville, I guess I would say this. Indiana is so good offensively that they can beat anybody, anywhere, in any building in the country.
I agree with that.
But they're also obviously susceptible to losing to basically anybody, because they've got on their resume now losses to Fort Wayne and Nebraska. Fort Wayne's 125th in KenPom. Nebraska's 86th. The Nebraska one comes at home. But they've also got wins over North Carolina. Got to win over Kansas. So, like, they're going to be one of those teams that could lose in the round of 32 of the NCAA tournament or play for the national championship. I still believe that. I don't know that I would still project them to win the Big Ten, because it can like these things are often decided by one game, and it could, you know, that a home loss to Nebraska could be what determines your whether you're, you know, finished first or third in the Big Ten standings. But my grand opinion about Indiana, at least in terms of what's possible, hasn't changed. I could still see them in the Final Four, but they're obviously susceptible to losing to inferior teams because they've already done it. They've already done it twice.
Shout out to Devin Downey.
What does that mean? that was the most abrupt shout out to Devin Downey we've ever had. You just wanted to make sure we didn't forget it.
I just wanted to see if you were ready for it as well.
Yeah, I already had it planned. I knew exactly where I was going to use it.
Oh, I had to throw it at you there, buddy, because we got a lot of response.
Duke is at Virginia Tech. We'll wrap up with this. There is no Grayson Allen there. It's not like, you know, playing without Devin Downey, but it is like
there. It is.
But it is, shout out to Devin Downey. But it is like playing without a guy who was the preseason national player of the year. Is Duke in trouble at Virginia Tech on Saturday?
Ooh, you know what? I think it might be.
Oh wow, you think Buzz Williams might get him?
I think they might get him. But you know, for people that are gonna watch this game, you haven't had a lot of chances to see Virginia Tech this year. They haven't had high-profile games. Couple, you know, on the ESPNU, ESPN2 type, back when they had neutral court games earlier in the season. But Michigan, they won, what, at Michigan, right? Went late November.
Yeah,
what, I think they beat Michigan.
Beat Nebraska, beat Michigan. Beat Ole Miss.
So, yeah, so the Michigan one's good because they won that on the road. That's an impressive win, but I don't even think Michigan personally will wind up as a top 30 team at the end of the season. So this is the first, you know, elite team that Virginia Tech's played. Now they get them on their home floor. They don't have Grayson. I think it'll be really good. I think Virginia Tech's got a solid chance at stealing it personally. But I'm most intrigued to see how many minutes Giles gets. Duke has had a nice little layoff here since the Allen fallout. It's been more than a week. I'd love to see if Giles can be on the floor for more than 15 minutes and actually be integrated within the offense. And then I think Tatum could also have a pretty big game. If Duke loses, I'll say that happens because Tatum or Jefferson gets in some serious foul trouble and they go cold from three. I think that's pretty much the only way that that's going to happen. Not that Tech doesn't have the personnel necessarily to do it. They've got a solid roster. Zach Ledeh is a really good player. He was on our top 101 preseason list overall, but we'll see. Buzz Williams, this is a big moment right here. You know, they've had a nice start against a strength schedule that hasn't been great overall. But yeah, if I'm picking, I'm saying Duke. Give me Duke by four, but I think it will be close. I'd be surprised if Duke ran away with it.
I'd be surprised if Duke runs away with it. It's just hard to win. Like, you know, when you're playing a top 35 team on the road, like I don't care who you are. Like, you're up against it a little bit. Like, even Virginia, I think it was last week, went to Cal, and Cal's fine. You know, they're fine. But, like, you know, they barely got out of there. It can be difficult to go on the road and beat a legitimate top 35 team. I think Virginia Tech is right around that. Yeah, Duke in a close one, but yeah, it should be a close one. I believe the point spread's only about, you know, 5, 6, 7 points. So Vegas thinks it'll be a close one as well. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on iTunes. That's the best way to get the latest episodes as quickly as possible. So please do that. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you again in 2017. Be safe out there. Talk to you Monday. Bye.